Because of the topic of tonight's show, which is crop circles and how that relates to the archetypal feminine, the corn goddess, mother of agriculture, and the sustenance she provides so that we might live and prosper. Yes, corn mother, the life giver, and women as the grain goddess who within themselves create the miracle of life. And the person sharing his insights on this topic tonight, Jung, Crop Circles, and the Reemergence of the Archetypal Feminine, is Gary Bobroff, who has written a book on the subject that's going to be out in early August. And we're going to be discussing these very subjects. I bet you didn't know you could find parallels with crop circles and goddess. Well, that's why Gary's on the show, because we try to bring you cutting-edge theories and revive important old ideas that might have been forgotten and need the breath of new life. But before we get to this interesting subject tonight, I have just a couple quick announcements, and I promise to keep it short. First, save the date right around the corner. Sacred Sundays are starting again at the Green Man in Hollywood on July 24th and every fourth Sunday thereafter indefinitely. You can check out my webpage, KarenTate.com. Go to the Sacred Sundays button on the left-hand side of the page and see what that's all about. We've been on hiatus for a bit, but now we're back and happy to be serving the community once again. And I'm one of the Sacred Feminine Priestesses facilitating the service each month. So come out and say hello and see how we celebrate the sacred feminine alongside the divine masculine. Also, the annual Isis Birthday Mediterranean Feast is set for July 31st, and we've almost reached our maximum capacity. So if you're thinking of coming, delay no longer. We've been celebrating the birthday of our great mother for almost a decade each July, and we continue the tradition, but this time with a feast instead of a high tea. So if you're interested in joining us, it's going to be in Hawthorne. And I'm happy to give you the details. Just email me, and I'll send you the menu, the cost, and the exact location. And that brings me to that brings tonight's announcements to a close. So let me get to our guest, who's returning to us, to Voices of the Sacred Feminine, Gary Bobroff. I'll start with a little bit of his bio, so you have a sense of who he is, and you know, maybe how his ideas have been shaped. Gary has a master's degree in Jungian-oriented psychology from Pacifica Graduate Institute of Santa Barbara, California, and his book as a revision for general readership of the thesis that he wrote there. His book looks at the science, history, and symbolic nature of crop circles, and his goal is to present a framework for the reader's own deeper consideration of this modern mystery. Taking a Jungian approach, he looks for meaning in the nature of this phenomena as being placed into grain and geocentric forms. Finding the archetypal feminine present there, he looks at both the phenomenon itself and the nature of the era into which it's arrived, placing and places a modern dream into the context of modern reality. Both psychologically grounded and open to the inspiring awe of this new phenomena, his approach is accessible to everyone and no prior exposure to Jung or crop circles required. He's been privileged to explore crop circle formations in Canada, the U.S., and Great Britain. And I'm going to give you his website now, but of course we'll repeat it later. It's jungandcropcircles.net. That's J-U-N-G. A-N-D, cropcircles.net. So, Gary, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
Glad to have you back.
Thank you. Great to be back.
Well, you know, I honestly, when I saw the title of your book, I went, wow, that is sure interesting. I hadn't in a million years dreamed of connecting goddess or the sacred feminine with crop circles. But after looking over some of your press materials, it's starting to make sense. So, you know, let's sort of get into that. And so listeners can start to connect the dots, too. In the first chapter of your book, you look at the science behind the crop circle phenomena. So that might be a good place to start.
Yeah, it's important that, you know, people understand that there is a clearly scientifically definable mystery that we're encountering with crop circles. We know from a variety of changes to the plants that there's a mystery going on here, that something non-human is making these formations in grain around the world. So there's a great website for this if readers want to check out, bltresearch.com. And I have some of this on my site, but bltresearch.com is really the center for the science of crop circles.
Well, I was about to say, we can just off the bat say to listeners, this is not guys going around with a piece of wood bending down the crops. That we're throwing
right.
that out the window right off, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'll talk a little bit about the hoaxing phenomenon because that is a phenomenon that goes on. But there's a genuine, the science points to a genuine mystery going on. So what do we see in the science? Well, we see physical changes first off to the plants themselves. So if you look at the nodes of the affected grain, you're going to see bent nodes, blown nodes, and stretched nodes. And perhaps the most characteristic physical change is that at the root node, the first node above the ground, will very often in genuine formations, there'll be a 90-degree bend, maybe not in every plant, but in a lot of the plants, so that you can see that, you know, this plant that was once standing straight up is now at the root node bent at 90 degrees parallel to the ground and is still alive, is still, you know, functional, but it has gone from standing straight up to, you know, paralleling the ground. So you see, you know, those nodes bent in that way, or you'll see blown nodes, expulsion cavities where the node has been actually blown out from the energy transferring through it. And stretch nodes, and that's a phenomenon that we see, very clearly defined. In the area of the formation, the plants will have that, and if you go outside of the formation, the plants don't have that. And what's even more interesting is that, you know, the science that's been done has observed that those changes in the nodes, the stretched difference in the nodes, will be more towards the center of the formation and less as you go towards the edge. And that follows what's called the Beer-Lambert principle in physics, which is, you know, the energy source, the amount of change should be, more towards the center and less as you go towards the edge. And now that's just the first category of science, and there's like nine different categories of change to the plants themselves that show that, you know, this is going on. So another one is the magnetic materials, tiny, you know, pieces of kind of metallish magnetic material fused into the grain itself. And again, with those magnetic materials, we found them dispersed in the same way that the node changes are dispersed, more in the center, less as you go towards the edge. And in one of the crop circle videos that's out that I'll recommend, they actually have footage of someone holding up grain with a magnet. And that shows you know, how much material is actually in that particular formation. And that formation actually was from the province in Canada where I grew up. So, I'm kind of nice that there's a kind of a natural connection for me, you know, even, in Canada to the crop circle. So,
me ask you, Gary. I mean, you've from your bio, you've seen the crop circles in Canada, the U.S., Britain. Are those the only countries it's happening in, or is it happening all over the world?
All over Europe. It's all over Europe. it's going on, you know, even this year. This year so far, we're getting a lot of reports out of Italy. You know, there's a lot going on, you know, throughout Europe, Eastern Europe, Western Europe, many, many different countries, you know, and there's lots of great websites, and there's links on my page to lots of great websites, that international crop circle databases, that kind of thing, where people can go and look for themselves, which is really, I think, you know, part of what's called for by this phenomenon, is that every person do their own, you know, research and their own process of coming to reckon with the phenomenon for themselves.
Well, now, you know, rather than go into all the different ways of science, they're different, because, I mean, you listed them for me. You already mentioned some of the physical changes. They're magnetic, they're biochemical changes, germinal, cellular, electromagnetic, crystallinity. Did any, without talking about each one of them, because, you know, listeners aren't scientists and it might sort of make their eyes
sure.
glaze over, or is there
sure.
any one in particular that's really interesting that that might be the most important
sure.
to know about, or is it just
yeah,
important to
the,
know that all of these changes yeah. are happening to the plants?
Yeah, let me give you the 10-second version of each of those. So cellular level changes, the actual cellular structure on the plants in an authentic formation are changed. So there's an expansion of the cell wall. That's obviously very hard to fake. The germinal changes, so how the seeds of wheat or whatever the crop is germinate. If the crop circle comes down early in the growing season, those seeds won't germinate. If the crop circle comes late in the growing season, those seeds will germinate with greater and faster growth than an unaffected seed from the same field. So those are both quite remarkable. Electromagnetic differences have been noticed for a long, long time. You know, one of the things I have in my book is, you know, newspaper articles from the 1970s in Canada where they have found the crop circle and gone in there with, you know, a Geiger counter and checked the field and found electromagnetic differences even back then, and that's something we still see today. So that's the quick version of the science.
Well, and you're making me think about on the germinal changes, you're saying that it can actually make the plant grow faster. If we knew what was happening there, might that actually help science produce food faster?
Sure, right, exactly. That's one of the things that people think about, you know, with this stuff. I've eaten crop circle wheat myself, as most people that have been in them have, and you know, that is one of the things we think about. You know, what would it mean to understand who's making this? Perhaps there is some, you know, way that we could, you know, feed the world a little easier if we were in touch with this phenomenon.
And from what you just said, you seem to imply that even though the grain has gone through all of these vast changes, we think it's still safe to eat, or we know it's still safe to eat.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there's a lot of difference, too. I mean, people talk about, and my experience of being in them, is if you go in a formation that came down, you know, within 24 hours, and, you know, it wasn't there yesterday, it's there today, and now you're in it, people tend to feel a lot of electromagnetic energy off that. I certainly have, you know, in the formations that I've been to that were very fresh.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whether that would be as safe to eat as something that's maybe, you know, been sitting around a little longer, I don't know. But I certainly, you know, I haven't been afraid to eat it myself, so.
Well, and you know, the $62 million question, if you've been doing all of this research, is there a consensus now among researchers how this is happening?
You know, I think one of the ways that, you know, crop circles are a phenomenon of the archetypal feminine is that we can know with a sort of, you know, scientific masculine certainty that there is a mystery. But the nature or the agent behind that mystery remains a mystery to us, remains unknown to us. And I think in that way the phenomenon, you know, is affecting a turn towards the archetypal feminine in that, you know, the question has to sit with each one of us as to what we feel is going on in this moment, rather than being able to turn to some sort of institutional masculine, you know, source and say, well, it's this, it's that. We don't really know. what's making it, and, you know, I can talk about different kinds of agency and what people say, this, that, or the other, but what I love about it and what I see as archetypal feminine in this phenomenon is that it is mysterious, genuinely.
And that in itself connects it to the mysteries of the feminine. Well, now you include references to archival documents showing that this has been happening for centuries. So for people who might think that, you know, this has only been happening for a few decades, that's not the case at all, I suppose.
Yeah. No, it does go way, way back. And, you know, as far back as, you know, 17th century, you know, there's a famous, these are on my website too, but, you know, they're quite well known at this point. The Mowing Devil woodcut from 1678 clearly depicts something that looks exactly like a crop circle and gives a kind of late medieval explanation for how it came about. A farmer, not wanting to pay the mower's rates, that night he sees his field lit up somehow, and then the next morning it's got a crop circle that fits with the description of what we see today in it, and he blames that on the devil. Then you go into later sort of Enlightenment era descriptions of the phenomenon in England that, you know, put a sort of naturalistic spin on it and say, oh, is it some sort of weather phenomenon that's generating these circles? And there's Robert Plott, who was a professor at Oxford, recorded them in 1686. And Nature magazine, a science journal from England in 1880, also has a mention of them as well. So, you know, as the human culture has changed, our responses to crop circles have changed. And it's kind of like, you know, they become almost like a Rorschach where, you know, our responses to crop circles tell us more about ourselves than about the phenomenon themselves. So,
very,
you know,
interesting.
I think that plays out today where everyone's so willing to easily accept that the thing was a hoax rather than, you know, looking at it themselves, although there's a lot of renewed interest, you know, at this time, and people are coming back to look at crop circles. But, you know, 15 years ago, a lot of people thought, oh, it's just a hoax. And I think that's still the predominant answer. And why is it that we fall for that so easily today?
Well, in these ones from so long ago, were they as intricate as some of the incredibly gorgeous geometrical designs we see, from aerial photographs today?
They tended to be much simpler, you know, a ring or a circle or a square, that kind of simple form. And that's also the way you see it, you know, in places that are not close to England. So in Saskatchewan, the crop circles tend to be simpler forms. And in, you know, places that are, you know, England's been the hub of both the frequency of crop circles appearing and the evolution of form into more and more complex, construction. So the further you get away from that, you know, the more simple it is, and we see that in the history too.
Well, and you wonder, and I mean, this is just a leap in logic, of course, but when people were simpler, the crop circles were simpler. if we're going to start to talk about the psychology of these things, and which I think is, you know, where we're going with the conversation. I mean, is there something to be said for that, or is maybe that's just an oversimplification?
Well, one thing I always think about them, you know, in the past, and something that would make a lot of sense to me is that, and I've heard other people talk about it as well, is that, you know, why are there these stone circles predominantly around England? And a lot of people feel that those stone circles commemorated early crop circles, that the crop circle came and the people that were there were amazed and they knew it was something special, and they put the stones there to commemorate that or honor that or hold the energy of that. And that's the origination of the English stone circles, which are, you know, just abundant in English landscape. So, that's something I think about with, you know, the sort of, you know, basic form of them and the early kind of history of people reacting to them.
Well, now, you have something listed here, Milk Hill, 2001, 409 circles.
Mm-hmm.
Did that happen in one night?
Yes. That's a very famous one, and it's one that I was very lucky to get into. That came down on the night of a thunderstorm, on a hill in England, 2001, 409 circles, 1,000 feet across, perfect fractal geometry. People that had been in a lot of crop circles talk about going in that formation and taking them half an hour to find the middle. It was quite huge. I mean, being in it myself, you really did not have any sense of, you know, what it looked like from above. And, of course, you see the pictures from above, and it's perfect fractal geometry. You know, I believe it was 6 Julia sets, you know, just perfect coming out from the center. It's quite amazing. And, you know,
well, and that's one of the reasons why, if, you know, sort of the hoax of men, you know, pressing down wheat with boards was, you know, sort of absurd, because they couldn't have done these designs so accurately and perfectly.
Right, right. Well, and, you know, that explanation got sold to the Western culture through a very sophisticated media operation that promoted the hoaxing explanation, you know, starting with 1989, when Queen Elizabeth had a crop circle book on her summer reading list. Soon after that, you know, some sort of, you know, institution, whether it was the governments of England and the U.S. or something else, started a campaign to discredit the crop circle movement and the researchers and all that. So, you know, there was a well-organized media campaign to use to promote the hoaxing explanation. So.
So if you're a crop circle researcher, does that, you know, are you sort of on par with the UFO researchers then?
I guess so. I don't know.
That's horrible. I mean, I think that's horrible. I mean, I feel like that's terribly closed-minded, but I just, I wondered, you know, from what you just said, that why would the Western media want to do that? What do you think the motivation was?
Well, I think, you know, the reason that it gets so popular so easily is that, you know, coming back to the focus of your program, which is archetypal masculine and archetypal feminine, you know, the archetypal masculine really, you know, from a sort of small-minded version of the masculine, really wants to have everything fit in a little box and have, you know, reality be very sort of easily contained in a box, whether that's a religious box or a scientific box. You know, they want to reduce the mystery and the magic of the universe that I see, you know, the archetypal feminine connecting us to. You know, they from a simple-minded masculine position, they tend to want all these kind of mysteries of the world to not exist, to go away, and it's much easier to stay in a sort of, you know, ego-minded, reductionist view of the world if you don't have to deal with mysteries like crop circles or UFOs or, you know, synchronicity or, you know, the fact that we see the participation of the person with the experiment in quantum physics and those sort of things. For me, all of these things are becoming more conscious for us at the moment, and all these kind of mysterious things represent the masculine being led home to the feminine, but we'll get more into that.
Right, right. Well, and I get into the sacred too, but as long as we're talking about institution and, you know, and the archetypal masculine trying to put this in a box, had there been any comments by, say, the Vatican or religious groups in response to this, or have they just ignored it?
You know, I don't really know off the top of my head, actually. That's a good question. I'm not really, you know, I'm not paying too much attention to what the Vatican's
Well, you know, they get disturbed by the strangest things. I mean, the movie Avatar, you know, bent the Pope out of shape. So, you know, I can imagine if we start attaching crop circles to the sacred feminine, he'll probably come out and say something about that. Is there sacred geometry or anything sacred about the crop circles in,
absolutely,
you know? So let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, there is. I mean, there's sacred geometry throughout the construction of the formation. So, And there's great footage of this, and there's great books on it, and I have those on my website, recommendations for both, because it's really something that you can appreciate visually when you get presented with it. But throughout the construction of authentic formations, there's sacred geometry. So the basic principle of sacred geometry is the lesser is to the greater as the greater is to the whole. So there's a symmetry throughout the design. And that symmetry will even extend into often how the formations are related to other sacred elements in the landscape, like a nearby stone circle or, you know, the white horses that you see on the hills in England, that kind of thing. And to me, that, you know, that the presence of sacred geometry in it, you know, that speaks something to the character of the agency behind the phenomenon. You know, we can talk about the different categories of agency and who we think might be making it, but, you know, to use a Bible quote, I guess, you know, by their fruits shall you know them. So, you know, they're artists.
Yeah, it's not like they're creating a nightmare out there. They're creating, you know, things of beauty, you know, mathematical things. So there seems like there's intelligence associated with it, mystery associated with it. So let's talk about the agency a little bit too. You know, what are the different sources being touted, you know, that are getting credit for these things?
Well, I think that, you know, other than hoaxing, which is, you know, the sort of number one knee-jerk reaction of, you know, modern society to something like that, you know, number two is aliens. There's sort of three categories that people in the crop circle world generally talk about what's behind the phenomenon in general. They talk about aliens or extraterrestrials or something like that. They talk about spirit or some kind of, you know, God or some kind of spiritual agency being involved with making it. And then the third category is some kind of involvement with the earth. Either the idea that the crop circles are a kind of a warning that we're, you know, we're doing too much damage to the planet and, you know, we need to change our ways. And that is, that third category, the earth warning, is something that native elders in North America generally has been their reaction when they're shown the crop circles. So those are the three categories. And, you know, a lot of people spend a lot of time, I think, really focused on agency. You know, what is it? Aliens, is it this, is it that? And I think there's so much to be gained from a sort of psychological process standpoint from looking at our own reactions. Because very often people will say, oh, you know, even if they get beyond the hoax answer, they'll say, oh, it's aliens, and they move on and they forget about it. But you really, that skips the whole piece of considering what does it mean to be living in a time on the planet Earth when something like this is happening, you know, for good or bad. What does it mean to be present with it?
Well, and I'm sitting here thinking at the very least, it should say to you, you know, here I'm making, I guess, a huge generality, but it should say to people, gee, there's something larger than ourselves out there. There are still mysteries
right.
on this blue marble,
right.
you know, that, you know, that we can't, you know, that we can't answer. And, you know, that
right.
in itself, that wonder, you know, that wonder, which, I mean, we're so jaded, you know. And this is this kind of lets us be playful and imagine again.
Exactly. And I think that's part of what, you know, I write a lot in the book about, you know, the fact that, you know, we live and suffer from living in a moment that is over masculine in its consciousness. It's dried out. It's, you know, lost in rationality. Lost in a bunch of illusions about what the nature of the world is that are not true and that are robbing us of participation with meaning, with imagination, with, you know, the world as a bigger mystery than we imagine it to be. And here's a phenomenon that's definitely calling for our response. To me,
mm-hmm.
that wants to fire up our imaginative participation. And you know, that's part of its purpose, is to break us out of this illusion that the masculine has, you know, descended and left us with, that we think that, you know, there's no mystery left. Well, there's a lot of mystery left, and this is one of the ways we're finding it out.
Well, and also, too, you know, going back to patriarchal religion, how it has sort of disconnected us from nature, and here is nature calling to us and saying, hey, look at me, I'm still the mystery.
Exactly.
I mean, that was one of the reasons why I thought the Pope might have said something, because, you know, after the movie Avatar, one of his statements was, nature will never replace religion. So, I don't know. You know, it would be curious. I'm going to have to Google this when we get off our call, just to see if there has been anything said by any of the churches. I mean, look, you got Baptist priests out there saying Reiki is evil, yoga is evil. I mean, you know, some of these guys are messed up. They live in such a fearful little box.
Well, and what a better phenomenon could we have to bring, you know, the divine back with nature than something like crop circles.
Absolutely.
You know, a mystery from somewhere we don't know where it's from that is on the earth. You know, and I think that's one of the delusions that's helping us and making it so easy for us to destroy the planet, is that we have split off, you know, divinity and nature. We've split off spirit from matter. And that's, you know, that's how we're able to destroy the planet without thinking twice, is because those two things have become so artificially, psychologically separated for us, in a very sick way.
Well, Gary, I have someone that's been holding a while here. Let me just, I want to just go in before we get into the psychology of this a bit more and just see if they're holding to listen or if they might have a question for you. So let's give this a try. I have a new switchboard here, so I hope this works.
Okay.
Hi, caller. Are you there? From the 404 area code, did you have a question for Gary? Okay, I think they're gone. I hope I didn't disconnect them. okay. So, anyway, so let's start talking about the psychology of this. You know, what made you start thinking about the crop circles in relationship to the sacred feminine? Was it one of, you know, what was your aha moment?
Well, my aha moment, I think, you know, like you mentioned, with something like the Corn Mother at the opening, I think for a lot of, you know, Jungians that are, you know, would look at something like crop circles, you know, I talk about the book as putting the dream of crop circles into the context of our reality, into the context of human reality. So, to me, if I was to look at crop circles as a dream, there's two essential elements. There's the crop, there's grain, and there's the circle. And with crop and grain, I mean, as you mentioned with the Corn Mother, it is so clearly associated throughout, you know, human history and human mythology with the feminine. And we've deeply lost appreciation for, you know, the feminine as divine, for the sacred feminine, the mystery and the miracle of life, that kind of thing. And when I talk about archetypal feminine and masculine, I'm talking about something that flows through every man and woman. We all have connection to the feminine and masculine. Now, when I look at you know, the grain element of crop circles, it's really clear that we used to venerate very deeply grain. There's so much history to this. Even our word cereal, you know, comes from the Roman goddess Ceres, which is just an adaptation of Greek Demeter, when we have the Demeter and Persephone myth, which was the center of, you know, the Eleusinian mysteries, and the, you know, the connection there on in both ways to the feminine, where, you know, the grain that is, you know, put in the earth is, you know, becomes a symbol for the tremendous power that the feminine represents to give life out of nothing. And, you know, we go from those ancient traditions to, you know, the weaving of the corn dollies in England and Eastern Europe, where they would take the last sheaves of the harvest and weave them into a grandmother figure or some kind of corn dolly of some form, or in the Celtic countries, they'll do the Brigid cross. There's a tremendous history there where we used to honor the source from which, we receive the miracle of life and the miracle of, food and that.
And
all
we can't
that
forget in Asia at the rice goddesses,
Right.
So them too. I just want to make sure we throw them in and not neglect them.
Absolutely. Well, in Indian as well, right? There are occasional male grain goddesses, but they're trumped, by a great number of feminine grain goddesses. And, clearly, this is a content. It's psychologically something that we've lost. If you ask a kid today, where does their food come from? They say the store. People really don't know or have any kind of veneration for, the divinity in the miracle of life. And I think, that's something that's, pretty well accepted and recognized in the Jungian world, is that, we have lost the feminine and that we need to come back to it in order to survive. And that's, for me, the aha moment with crop circles is that they're in crop. I mean, it's not in sand or, metal or something else. It's in this content, that this media that is so representative of something that we are so desperately in need of connecting with again.
Wow. I'll never look at or think about crop circles the same again, quite frankly, Gary, because this makes so much sense. I can actually see, Wiccan or pagan groups in England go and set up little altars out in the middle of a crop circle.
Mm-hmm.
Quick questions going back to the crop circles, because I want to get back to the psychology of it too. Has anyone ever witnessed it happening, a crop circle in process? That's my first question, because the second one I think I forgot now. So why don't you answer that while I try to remember?
Sure. Well, people have seen them and seen them forming, and they've seen a variety of different things. And to me, that's actually quite interesting, that it's not sort of one pat answer. So what people report seeing is everything from, an American witness who saw one form in the daytime in just a massive kind of a wind that came up, and within a few seconds the crop circle was there, to people at night seeing balls of light, and then the crop circle there afterwards, or even beams of light coming down from above into a field and then crop circle thereafter. So there's a variety of ways, even a mist. There's about 25 eyewitness accounts that I've read throughout all the literature on crop circles. And we see all these different examples. Yeah.
This might be totally off base, and I'm probably going to show my lack of scientific knowledge here, but I'm thinking about a recent guest I had who was talking about quantum theory, and part of the conversation went in the direction of, could people's thoughts and energy be creating natural disasters? So it makes me think, could the more positive thoughts that people are putting out to the universe be creating these natural occurrences? I mean, has that ever even came up, or is that just too far crazy?
Well, there's definitely been a history of groups in England meditating on crop circle formations and then, having received some kind of answer to that meditation. There's a famous story of a group of Japanese tourists were in the English fields in search of crop circles, and they meditated one evening and they wanted to receive some kind of message in a symbol that, would speak to them of their own culture in the crop circle formation. And within a very short matter of time, a crop circle appeared that looked very much like origami.
Huh. Interesting.
There is a very clear connection, and we see this throughout the researchers' that are involved. There's so many reports of people having an emotional connection to the phenomenon and then having some kind of response from the phenomenon. So famous researcher Colin Andrews, early in his work, one summer can no longer afford to go around England chasing crop circles. He says out loud, I believe, a prayer, you know, for the crop circles to happen closer to his home. And within, I believe it was the next morning, but within a few days, gets a call from a farmer and there's a crop circle very close by. He and a pilot were flying over a certain field talking about the next evolution in the design of the formations, looking for a Celtic cross. Within a few days, a Celtic cross not only appears, but appears over the spot that they were flying, at the spot they were flying over when they had that conversation.
Wow.
The researcher, Nancy Talbot, gives a story that I talk about in the book, where she describes her own experience of being in Holland at a place that they've had a lot of crop circles, and being really sort of frustrated with the phenomenon. Why can't it be more direct? Why can't it, you know, stop pussyfooting around, as she says, and you know, just allow itself to be solved? And that night, she was the eyewitness to a formation occurring in the backfield of that farm. So there is a strong connection between people who really invest themselves emotionally. And what's really important for me, and I'll explain why with this, is the emotional involvement, not just a sort of heady or a sort of Puritan, you know, get in there and do your work kind of involvement, but an emotional involvement is when the response comes. And what's interesting to me about that is also the case with synchronicity. And we know synchronicity is a principle of nature by which, you know, occurrences are brought into form that have meaning. And where does that meaning come from? It comes from an emotional connection. I mean, even, you know, 700 years ago, we have one of the teachers of Thomas Aquinas talking about power in nature to transform events to her. And that happens in moments of, you know, heightened emotion. And Jung saw this throughout his time. You know, Jung was the person who coined the term synchronicity, if people don't know. And he observed repeatedly that what brings a synchronicity into occurrence is not simply just a heady awareness, but it's emotional involvement with the situation.
Well, I'll throw this in. When they teach you to do magic or focused intention, whatever label you want to give it, I can tell you that people have better responses to their focused intention if they are emotionally attached in a strong way to what they're doing. You know, they can't
right.
just, the emotion seems to be a big key and a lot of things. Well, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, that woman that you mentioned who said, oh, quit pussyfooting around, and then she actually sees one form. I wish she had said, communicate with me. Tell me what, tell me what you're about, rather than just, I mean, not that I wouldn't have been happy to see it form, but I'd wanted more of an answer.
Sure, but I think, you know, again, it's the relationship. To me, that, again, it speaks to the archetypal feminine. We're not in a situation where we're going to get an archetypal masculine pat answer that we can box this thing up and be done with it. It's so beautiful to me that it is coming, expressing in all these different ways, the archetypal feminine, that it's about a relatedness between us and the phenomenon.
Very good point.
Something that can't, that won't be solved directly, but by our relationship with it, perhaps we can be transformed, because it's not, you know, it's not just a puzzle that needs to be solved. It's, we need to come alive to a mystery that may, you know, help us to save the planet. Because
well,
right now,
I say these stories you described, I mean, it's almost as if could you go so far as to say almost an interaction, you know, a cause and effect, you know?
Yes. And that being such a compensation to the image that we have of the divine in a masculine way, of something abstract and distant and far away from us, now to be participating with something of, you know, I don't want to make a divinity out of it, but something that has some kind of power that we don't have.
It's like the essence of the sacred feminine, the divine feminine.
That's right.
You know, is,
that's right. And exactly. And it doesn't mean that the agent making them is the archetypal feminine, but the agent that is making them through its engagement with us is leading us to be more engaged with our own archetypal feminine.
Very cool. Well, Gary, I have another person that has been waiting for about 12 minutes here on the switchboard.
Okay.
Let me just check in with them and see if they have a question. Then I want to get into the shape and, you know, the rest of our conversation. So let's see
sure.
if these folks have a question for you. Hi, from the 253 area code. Did you have a question for Gary?
Hi. Yes. This is so fascinating for me, and I just love your approach, Gary, because it speaks to me of the archetypes of transformation in the Jungian concepts. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, you mean the archetype of transformation is what you were asking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, from Carl Jung. And
yeah, we're
to me,
talk
if
about
I
that,
recall,
right.
he was talking about the collective unconscious brings these polar opposites together to create that integration of polarities. And in
oh,
that
right.
integration of polarities, that's the great secret of alchemy, is that integration of polarities comes to that middle point, which
yes.
is that zero point. And that's where we are right now. I'm just so jazzed by what you're saying. I'm so on fire with it, Gary. Tell me where I go from here. I call you, or I get onto your research website, or where do I go?
Well, you can pre-order the book now, and you go to my website, and they've got the pre-order page there now. And
what
I
is
also
your website,
have
honey?
It's jungandcropcircles.net.
.net, okay.
All right, well, yeah. thank you for calling
also,
me.
Also, wait just a minute. I had also another flashy little thing as you were talking. The Druids have the stone circles, and it occurred to me that the pyramid, the Giza pyramid, was created through sound, vibration, and tone. They were able to lift these, you know, huge stone formations and create this pyramid through sound. I'm thinking that's probably next for these crop circles. It's the evolution of crop circles. What do you get about that?
Right, let me do
next.
The first one first, and then I'll come to the second one after.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, so the first question there, she's talking about, you know, transformation. And Jung was really clear that there's a force in nature that in the human being he talks about as the self. And what that force is it's the overarching principle that brings together both unconscious and conscious, that allows us to grow, you know, from out of imbalance back into harmony, to maintain our individuality while growing into greater forms, and that this self archetype, as he called it, you know, expresses the whole totality of the psyche, you know, including the relationship between man and the whole of nature, is a Jung quote. And he talks about the circle as a symbol of that. So the circle is a symbol of this self, of this force in us that, you know, when the psyche breaks down completely, when you're dealing with someone who, you know, is in a, you know, a psychotic break, or, you know, is dealing with their psyche falling apart, they may turn to geocentric forms in artistic expression as, you know, a way to express their need and desire and perhaps the emergence of a return to centeredness and wholeness. On the other end of the psyche, when you get to the top, when you get to spiritual, mystic, religious experience and expression, you see geocentric forms, so circle, square, things that are centered around something else. So you see the mandala, you see Tibetan mandalas, Tibetan sand painting of mandala, Navajo sand painting, cathedral windows in the west, labyrinths, all these things that are express the psyche's desire to be centered again. You know, and that could be pilgrimages around Mecca or, you know, the Stonehenge Circle or any place where you walk and move around a central point. So that doesn't come from nowhere. There's a piece of us that is expressing. It's expressing what Jung called the self inside us that wants to return to coherence, to balance, to, you know, find the missing piece. So it's so interesting that for me, in a moment that we are lost in a masculine death spiral or an illusion of what the world really is, that this symbol has two elements. You know, the mystery before us has two elements. One, it's circular. It wants to bring us back into balance. And two, it's feminine. It wants us to bring us back to the thing we've lost. So, you know, what the caller was talking about with it being an object of transformation, I think, you know, the crop circle expresses what Jung called the self and our need to reconnect with this deep source of, you know, timelessness and eternal harmony inside ourselves.
Wow. Well, and when you're talking about going round in circles, I'm thinking about in Islam when they circumambulate the Kaaba stone, which goes back to pre-Islamic times when people in that part of the world were, you know, worshiping goddess and, you know, very, very interesting stuff. I mean, so this is primal behavior.
Absolutely. And people used to do that, of course, around the grain fields before they would plant. You know, so these two things are not separated, you know.
Okay. Now, is you know, but talk a little bit more about this idea of the absence of the feminine in our culture.
Right.
You know, I mean, can we use this? I mean, other than, you know, to observe it and maybe recognize it as, you know, what we're talking about tonight, that this is a reemergence
right.
of the feminine, is there a way to, I don't know, to work with the crop circles? I mean, that, you know, might be going too far. I mean, what were your thoughts? Were there recommendations in your book? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I think really what my book is about ultimately is about the context. And, you know, what really is to me amazing about dreams is that, you know, it's not that we have this wonderful dream and it's so, you know, multi-leveled or it's so real or anything like that. What makes one really be blown away by a dream is when it really speaks to their life. When the context of their life is illuminated through the dream, then that's when they really get hit by the power of dreams. And Jung was very clear on that. I mean, he says what's most important about, you know, when you go to take up an obscure dream, the first task is not to try and understand or interpret, but to establish the context of the dream with minute care. You know, you have to look at the preceding experiences out of which the dream is composed. So in this case, to me, it's very clear that, you know, there's, you know, an evolution of consciousness going on through humanity where we have gone from a kind of primitive state thousands of years ago into an increasingly masculine understanding of ourselves and the world. And I characterize that movement as an upward movement. So we've gone, you know, up out of the unconscious, out of, you know, primitive magical thinking, into greater clarity, into distinction, into science, into religious moral structures that break off, you know, instinct and body from mind. There's a split, more and more of a split up, a split between mind and body, a split between, you know, nature and ourselves, you know, a redirection of our energy out of fascination with the world around us and up into wonder at our own ability to create that world, so to create it and control it. So we've gone up into our heads, and I think now we're up into an inflation, and we've completely lost the fact that we live in this context of nature, and we're really high on our own creative genius, our own technological ability, and we've lost the fact that there's something deeply missing in ourselves. We've gone up, 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 up. You know, one of the things I talk about in the book is that we've confused measurement with mastery. you know, we've measured the whole world and we think we've gotten rid of all the mystery out of it. You know? And that's an illness. It's a psychological illness.
Well, it's an arrogance, at least.
Right. But, I mean, Jung really talked about it as an illness. We've rejected any sort of context. And you see this illness in, you know, the fundamentalist thinking that, you know, wants to, basically says that, you know, the existence on planet Earth is bad. And, you know, when we go to heaven, everything's going to be great. I mean, that's an expression of this masculine illness that has lost the world. Now, there may have been a time, and there certainly, I believe, there was a purpose to this, which is, you know, the establishment of a strong consciousness and an ability to, you know, we've become a sturdy vehicle so that we can now go and look at the mystery of the world and comprehend more of it and feel more of it in our heart without falling into magical thinking and childish kind of regressive reactions to it. But, you know, we've gone far, you know, far too far up, and now we're being called back down. And
mm-hmm.
that calling back down means return to the feminine, return to the earth, return to the body, return to matter. And crop circles, for me, are just such a beautiful, lyrical, wonderful expression of that movement back down. We have to psychologically come back into, you know, into the moment, into the present, into the crises and the difficulties that we face in our individual lives. You know, what's going on that we can do something about right in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another way I talk about this is, you know, light and dark. You know, we're starting to see that things, these masculine things we thought were full of light, like, you know, the Catholic Church, for example. Some people used to think that. Or, you know, the financial system or the White House or whatever that were, those were the things that was a really, you know, you could bank on that. We're seeing that there's a lot of darkness in those things. And
right.
things that we thought were really dark, like, you know, the mysteries of the world, the mystery of psyche and matter, those kind of things are coming to light. We're seeing, you know, so many people are practicing yoga and tantra and different things where we're trying to infuse spirit and matter together once again in our bodies, in our emotions, in where we feel. Great Jungian, sort of Jung's right-hand woman, Marie-Louise von Franz, talks about the way that you reunite spirit and matter is through feeling. And I think, to me, that should really hit home with your listeners because, I mean, to me, that's the crux of why it's so important to understand the sacred feminine and honor it, is that, you know, we can really do the work that needs to be done in the moment through being honest with the feeling state that's going on for us in that moment and honoring it. And that's such a powerful idea to understand. But if you think about it, that's what something like synchronicity or crop circles is really pointing out, that we live in a world where every individual's feeling relationship to that world matters. And that's a mind-blowing principle and a different principle than our kind of masculine way of thinking about the world has taught us to pay attention to.
Hmm. Well, and you know, as I'm listening to you, it almost feels like it's a, you know, maybe they're a symbol for healing, or I'm also, you know, getting these ideas of, you know, it's like you can, the mother always forgives you, you know, you can go back
right.
to the loving arms of the mother kind
right.
of a thing. And, you know, those are some of the thoughts that, you know, pop into my head as I'm listening to you, you know, talk about this, you know, this return. But I'm wondering too, Gary, that when I was talking to you a moment ago about the woman with the quantum theory, they talked about how they could actually measure, and I forget now how she said, forgive me there, but where they like around 9/11, they could actually measure that there was an uptick of energy, intention, vibration. Has anything like any experiments like that been done at the crop circles, that maybe, you know, the
right.
earth is vibrating at a higher frequency in these spots or something?
Right. Yeah, I think you're talking about Dean Radin's work, the ion stuff there, where they were doing some testing or something at the moment of 9/11. But You know, that's a big topic that you're getting into there. I also want to mention, too, while we've got everybody on, is that I also have a Facebook group, which is facebook.com/youngandcropcircles. And for people that want to be involved in the dialogue, that's a good thing to get into. There's a lot of people that talk about with the change of the vibration of the earth and crop circles and that. I really can't speculate too much on that. All I know, comes really from what I really practically see before me, which is, you know, both the crop circle stuff and synchronicities, which, you know, as I said, I think speaks to a moment in time where we go, you know, through our masculine awareness and knowing back into an honoring of the feminine in the world and in ourselves. And, you know, that's the deal to me. You know.
That's the key. That's the key to everything, isn't it? Last question, I think, for you. You include in the final chapter of your book some interesting dream images from the 50s. Did you want to, tell us about those and, you know, how they connect with, you know, the conversation?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. And this material I'm going to talk about now, if people want to download it, the source for it, the San Francisco Young Society has made this source material available online. If you go to their website and you look at the, you can find the link to it on my page. But anyway, so what I found in the course of my research, and I feel so honored to have found this, is a dialogue that took place between an English woman counselor and art therapist named Irene Champernowne, who was living in the English countryside in the 50s, and she began to have a series of powerful dreams come to her, and she was lucky to have as her analyst at the time Tony Wolfe, and Tony Wolfe was basically Jung's other wife. If you went into the Zurich Psychological Club, there were three big portraits that hung above the door there: C.G. Jung, his wife Emma Jung, and Tony Wolfe. So these are really the three people that birthed Jungian psychology, and, you know, at least in Jung's version of it. And so Irene Champernowne had these dreams, and these dreams showed UFO figures, UFOs, swirled grain, and female figures, all in an ongoing series. And she was able to paint those dreams, send them to Tony Wolfe, and have Tony Wolfe give her reactions, and the dream images are very powerful. And even Emma Jung, who after Tony Wolfe passed away, Irene flew over to Zurich to pick up the images, and Emma Jung said to her, you know, I feel that there's something in them for women in general, that there's something in these images for everyone. And they're very powerful, and I get into them in the book, and you can see more on the website. But it gives us a chance, because Irene had these dreams, and I know, you know, she was living in the English countryside where crop circles were to come, and here she's having these dreams of swirled grain and UFOs and female figures and sending them over to Zurich and having Tony give her responses. And she met with C.G. Jung as well, and all three of these people talking to her about the archetypal feminine and what that meant in this moment was, you know, just a wonderful way that we can get a glimpse to what C.G. Jung and those two women would have thought about the crop circle phenomenon today.
Wow. Well, Gary, we're nearing the end of the chat. Is there anything that you want to say to listeners that maybe I haven't thought to ask you?
Well, the book can be pre-ordered now on my website, I would say that. But
okay.
Also, I mean, I think the point really is that, as far as I'm concerned, that this phenomenon responds, in my opinion, to every bit of effort that we put into meeting it, whether that's going on and looking at images online or, you know, thinking about the phenomenon or going to England or going to, you know, crop circles in the U.S. or elsewhere in Europe or Canada. You know, what we put into it, it gives back to us. So I think, people shouldn't underestimate the value of their interest and the value of just following what's real for them. If they're moved and interested, follow that and investigate it and go forward with it and don't
trivialize it.
Bigger forces, yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
Don't trivialize it, because, I mean, isn't that what's happened to the sacred feminine? You know, it's been trivialized, and look what it's gotten us.
Yeah.
Well, Gary, one last try for this listener, because she has been holding for a long time. I just want to make sure if she's been waiting there trying to talk to you, I don't ignore her. I know I wouldn't want that to happen to me. So hang on. Let me see if I can get her.
Sure.
Hi, listener from the 404 area code. I just wanted to give you another chance to talk to Gary. Did you have a question? Hello? Okay, well, we tried again. Well, Gary, let's go ahead and give your website one last time before we say goodnight.
Sure. Sure. I would have people look at both the website and the crops and the Facebook page. The Facebook page is facebook.com/youngandcropcircles. And the website is www.youngandcropcircles.com. youngandcropcircles.net.
Okay. Now, I know you do workshops. I mean, just recently you were doing some wonderful workshops on the sacred feminine and masculine. Are those ongoing? I mean, do you have any workshops around Southern California or anywhere else?
We're on hiatus with those, but the website for that work is yourmyth.com, and we also have a Facebook group, facebook.com/yourmyth, YOURmyth.
Okay.
So we're taking a little break from those right now, but we'll be back to them in probably in the winter of 2012.
Well, I think you should do some PowerPoint presentations for the new book.
Yeah, I will. I'll be doing them. Yes.
Okay. All right, well, Gary, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been delightful. And like I said, and I really mean it, I will never look at crop circles the same way again. I think you reinvigorated my interest, and my outlook is forever changed, and I thank you for that.
Thank you very much, Karen. I appreciate you saying that, and it's great to hear that. And thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. I enjoyed it a lot.
And good luck with the book. Good luck with the book.
Thank you so much.
All right, good night. Well, listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is Karen Tate, hostess of Voices of the Sacred Feminine, where we discuss Goddess, the Divine Feminine, and the resurging interest in right brain thinking and the feminine consciousness, even when we're talking about crop circles. Because obviously the great She is deity archetype and ideal, and we just never know how she will manifest in the world. And you've been listening to Gary Bobroff discussing Jung, crop circles, and the reemergence of the archetypal feminine. Well, as many of you know, adversaries of the sacred feminine tried to sweep away awareness and knowledge of her for all time. And with that sweeping away, when the great She was made to disappear because of the religion of patriarchy, of selfish and disconnected men and their war gods, well, women and their power, their leadership, their spiritual authority suffered. They were thwarted, repressed. Their power and leadership, their wisdom, all of that became diminished. They became taboo, disrespected. That's why here on the show I'm dedicated to recovering the great She, whether she be deity, archetype, or ideal. Yes, here we intend to defy, to taste the forbidden fruit, to be powerful and uppity women, to throw off the shackles, look under every rock, behind every locked door, and peer into the abyss of the past so that we might know why things are the way they are. And if tonight's any indication, we will be looking at contemporary things that can tell us why things are the way they are and what we might return to. So I would like to repeat again what have become the mottos for the show. The first is from the 19th century German philosopher, author Schopenhauer, and it goes like this. All truth passes through three stages. First, it's ridiculed. Second, it's violently opposed. And third, it's accepted for being self-evident. And the second, from Gandhi, he says, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. Well, a lot of the topics that we have here on the show, I think, sort of fits into these ways of thinking, because they might easily be poo-pooed by some people who live in their fearful little boxes. But, you know, eventually, after they finish ignoring us and laughing at us and fighting us, I think they'll find out we were right all along. So I'd like to invite you to stay tuned in with me for a few more minutes while I share some other important information. Then we'll close with some lovely music and tonight's inspiration and of beauty. First, I want to make sure, if you're new to the show or hadn't heard before, airtime here on Blog Talk, well, it's not free anymore. And I actually pay for it in order to give our wonderful guests a platform for their work. I see the show as adult education, spiritual activism, political activism, all of that sort of stuff. And I hope you will support the show because, as Goddess teaches us, what you nurture, what you nourish, it thrives. What you tend to, well, it grows and grows. And what you neglect, well, unfortunately, sometimes it withers. So I hope perhaps you'll see fit, if you like what I'm doing here the last few years, you'll help support the show by sending in a contribution. And if you do, depending on the amount, you will be rewarded with an assortment of thank you gifts. So please remember, you know, us, next time you have some discretionary income, and I've made it easy for you to make contributions to the show. You can just go to my website at KarenTate.com, go to the Goddess Store page, and down near the very bottom you'll see some PayPal buttons, and you can make a donation of any amount. And you know what? Don't feel sorry if you can only send a little bit, because the number of people sending a little bit, well, that adds up to a lot. And please be sure to remember the three F's. I'd love it if you would mark Voices of the Sacred Feminine a favorite. Be sure to become our friend and click on the follow button that's there on the show screen so that you never miss notice of any of my new guests each week. That way you're also a part of our growing family of listeners across the globe, because I don't actually have time every week to send out reminders. This way you will automatically be reminded by Blog Talk with an email in your box. And if you don't know, I actually have two books out myself. I don't always take much time to talk about them, but we have a little bit of time tonight. So I'd like to invite the influx of new listeners from across town and across the globe, because you send me your emails. I know where you're listening from. Please check out my two books, which have garnered prestigious endorsements and awards. My first book was Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations. And the second, Walking an Ancient Path, Rebirthing Goddess on Planet Earth. They're actually great bookends, because the Sacred Places book, it's more encyclopedic. It tells you about the goddesses and on every continent and their sacred places and how to get there if you'd like to travel there, or it's wonderful if you're an armchair traveler. There are Gaia alerts that tell about, you know, the distress species and the planet is in certain places. It also talks about goddess theology. Then Walking an Ancient Path, Rebirthing Goddess on Planet Earth, well, it's sort of a socio-political spiritual template on rebirthing goddess in our lives, whether we're doing it as an individual or as a community or as, you know, a species on the planet. It gives you an idea what it might look like to do that in your life if you can't imagine how to live goddess ideals. Anyway, you can get those two books from me for $25 plus shipping and handling, and I'll sign them for you, of course. Not a bad idea if you have to give a gift for yourself or a loved one soon. So you get those from the Goddess Store page on my website. And there's also free stuff there. Always like to mention the free stuff, because right now, with times being tight, who can't like free stuff? Besides having wonderful information, teaching brilliant articles there on the site. Check out the free meditations. There's one there for spring. There's another one that takes you to the Isis Temple on a spiritual journey. Fun stuff. I've gotten good feedback from the free meditations, so please go there and enjoy them. And I have a new article posted on the articles page now. It was actually on an international magazine called La Luz. The article is titled "The Inhumanity of the GOP, Always for Profits, Not People." And can't we just see that playing out all over the country as they use the deficit as an excuse to take rights away from workers, try to repeal child labor laws, do away with the minimum wage, Social Security, Medicare, and don't even get me started on how they're trying to decimate women's rights to their own bodies, all the while crying about regulation to keep the environment clean or to keep the bankers from robbing us blind again or the oil companies from destroying the ecosystem. Of course, they can regulate women's bodies, but they, you know, we don't dare regulate big business. Also, don't forget for future shows, you can email questions in if you don't want to talk live. But if you would like to talk on the show, please do. We're friendly here. We don't bite. It's like talking to friends over the kitchen table with a cup of tea or coffee. And you can always call in at 718-766-4662. I know most of you listen from the archives, but if you want to call in, I'm happy to chat with you or let you chat with one of my guests. Well, for tonight's closing inspiration, I'd like to share with you a poem that the original author is unknown, but it was revised by the Abbess of Avalon, Sandy Sariel, and it's called Goddess and the Rose, Folding a Rose, and it goes like this. It is only a tiny rosebud, a flower of goddess's design, but I cannot unfold the petals with these clumsy hands of mine. The secret of unfolding flowers is not known to such as I, but goddess opens the flower with beauty and no effort, just her grace. If I cannot unfold a rosebud, the flower of goddess's design, then how can I have the wisdom to unfold this life of mine? So I trust in her for leading each moment of my day. I look to her for guidance each step of my pilgrim's way. On the pathway that lies before me, I trust her to unfold the moments as she unfolds the rose. Well, next week, I want to tell you we will have with us from St. Mary's College of Maryland, Lane Doggett. She's written the book Love Cures, Healing and Magic in Old French Romance. We're going to be talking about that. Love Cures and Analyzing Them in Light of Medical and Magical Practices of the High Middle Ages. Sounds like fun. And we're also, later on in the month, we're going to be talking with Pamela Berger, talking about From Grain Goddess to Saint and Healing Sanctuaries. And Marguerite Rigoglioso and Nancy Lietzau, they're both going to be on the show in July. We're going to be talking about bee priestesses of ancient times, but we're also going to make it contemporary as we talk about colony collapse as a response to patriarchy and, just all of the goddess references and sacred feminine references to the bees and what's happening on the planet. So I hope you will, keep listening all month. So as we close tonight's show, I would like to let you listen to, I'd say, Corn Mother again in tribute to our show on Crop Circles. So good night, listeners, and thank you for tuning in. Thank you for being a part of the Sacred Feminine family, and I appreciate you, your gas in my tank. Good night.
Sacred Corn Mother, come to me, make my way sacred, fill me with Thank you.